I'd like to call the March 6th, 2024 meeting of the Law Enforcement Public Safety Committee meeting to order. Please rise for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Clerk, please call the roll.
Sure.
Chair Hansen.
Present.
Deputy Chair Hewitt.
Here.
Legislator Maloney.
Here.
Legislator McCullough.
Here.
Legislator Walz.
Here.
Okay, we have a forum, thank you. Approve the January 31st, 2024 meeting minutes. Is there any discussion on the minutes of that meeting? Okay, can I get a motion to approve the minutes? Motion, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, minutes approved. All right, we're going to get right into the resolutions. Resolution number 111, approving the execution of a contract for $109,962 entered into by the county Hershey Fencing Company, or Inc., I should say, Hershey Fencing and Railing, Ulster County Sheriff.
Good afternoon, everyone. Of course, this is my first meeting with the new legislature and the new Law Enforcement Public Safety Committee. I just wanted to advise all of you that I'm here to work with you, and I look forward and work at some of the issues that we have next couple of years, and congratulations to all of you to be assigned for this great committee. This particular resolution is for fencing, and I think the contract was already made with that company for the purposes of our securing was once up at Golden Hill that was shut down, and that was our fencing area for vehicles. Can't think of the name of it.
Impound?
Impound yard. Thank you. A little long there. So it's basically impound yard, and we got permission from the State Commission on Corrections to put it on the property of the sheriff's office, and that's what this is for.
Okay. Is there any questions or discussions? Okay.
What makes it so expensive? Is it a unique type of fencing?
So there's security cameras that have to go up. There's a couple of security entrances that have to be put together. It did go out for bid, and remember, it's for the securing of evidence in an impound lot, of course, and the additional cameras that have to be put up, and the proximity to the jail.
Thank you.
Cameras are included.
Say again?
Cameras are included at that place.
I believe that they are.
Any other questions or discussion? Okay, seeing none, a motion to adopt the resolution?
Make the motion.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion is. Okay.
Oh, okay.
We good or do we get it?
All right.
Yep. Motion is carried 5-0. The next resolution is number 112, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the counties of Orange, Rockland, and Sullivan for the purpose of creating a regional partnership for hazmat response, Department of Emergency Services. Director Erickson, would you like to speak on this, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is for the consortium, hazmat consortium, that is with Orange, Rockland, and Sullivan counties. This is done, received yearly. It's funding from the state. We use this to fund, to assist funding the hazmat program, which we do have a contract in place with the city of Kingston for the hazmat team. They're professional, they're career firefighters respond throughout the county with their hazmat team. So it's for $36,550. The equipment that's being proposed to purchase is attached as well as the hydro and calibration reimbursable services on Schedule 3C.
Okay, is there any discussion or questions? Okay, seeing none, I have a motion to adopt the resolution.
Yeah, a motion to adopt the resolution.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion is carried 5-0. Resolution 113, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the National Association of County and City Health Officials for the 2024 Operational Readiness Award, Department of Emergency Management. Department of Emergency Services. Director Erickson?
Thank you. This is towards the Medical Reserve Corps, which was established last year, if you recall. These funds is a revenue funds that we applied for to us, put towards the consultant fees that we pay for the MRC.
Any discussion or questions? Is there a motion to adopt the resolution?
Make the motion.
Second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion is carried 5-0. Resolution number 114, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement between New York State Department of Health and Office of Health Emergency Preparedness for 2023 through 2025, MRC, Department of Emergency Services.
Again, so this is another MRC grant that we applied for, and it's for supplies for the MRC program for $12,100. Also, the MRC, just to let everyone know, is a joint endeavor between us and the Ulster County Department of Health, but we hold all the funding for that, and we supervise the program.
Okay, is there any discussion or questions?
You said this is joint, so if they need to make purchases, they go through you?
Correct. So everything is predetermined at the beginning of the year, what we're looking to purchase, what needs to be done. We have a consultant that really manages the entire program for us, but it's between Department of Health and Department of Emergency Services.
One last question. Since they go through you, is everything coded to your expenses, or is there...
It's all within our budget.
It's in your budget?
Correct. Okay. That's why we apply for the grants and everything else.
And there's a portion that's allocated to them.
But nothing gets allocated to them?
No, but the expenses, they have expenses, you said, beforehand. A certain dollar amount or no?
No, so what they do is we meet regularly monthly.
Okay.
We talk about what needs to be purchased and so on. So it's all run through our department, but it's in conjunction with the Department of Health. So the director, Lisette McNulty, sits on the MRC, I wouldn't call it a board per se, but.
So all revenue and expenses go through you?
Correct.
Okay.
Also, just quickly on the front, when they do the budget process, they collaborate together to develop the budget for the upcoming year.
Correct.
For them. So then that through that budget development process, it comes through and it goes into Everett's budget, but that is the development that is jointly together.
Okay.
I just wanted to ask, so for the public, if you were to just briefly explain about the Medical Reserve Corps, what does that look like to the public?
So it's a volunteer program. So it was established after 9/11, where everyone wanted to volunteer. They all went down to New York City, and there was really no way to manage anyone coming down there. So this was developed after 9/11, and it's managed by the usually like the emergency manager in the county, which falls under our department, and it allows everyone to volunteer. To track what their trainings are. It gives us a way to contact them when it's needed. It would have been used during COVID, but we didn't have that established. Other counties did. So what we wanted to do is right after COVID was we wanted to really capture all those volunteers, have a way to work with them, provide the training necessary, being able to call them on any additional medical emergency that we may have, throughout the county. Any instance large scale that we want to call upon, Orange County uses them a lot for the air show down there. We could use them for the fair if we wanted to, and have like a medical tent, allow them to come there to provide medical attention there. That's become a big issue down there for the fair, so we can deploy them there. And the other instance, Sargades has, a lot of big events going on. New Paltz has big events going on. The city of Kingston has big events going on. We could deploy them there and have like medical tents and do those.
Thank you for that explanation. Any other questions or discussion? Motion to adopt the resolution.
I'll make the motion.
Second?
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Motion is carried 5-0. Resolution 115, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services, Office of Inoperable and Emergency Communications, for the 2023 Statewide Inoperable Communications Grant, amending the 2023 Ulster County Budget, Department of Emergency Communications, Emergency Management. Again, Director Erickson. That's okay.
So this is a yearly grant that we apply for and receive. So we're using this towards some consulting services for the radio, public safety radio system that we're building out, as well as some equipment for the tower site for the facility, for the government operations center.
Any questions or discussion? You said this is a yearly grant, correct?
Correct.
Yep. All right, great. All right, seeing no questions, motion to adopt the resolution.
I'll make the motion.
Second?
I'll second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion carries 5-0. The next resolution is number 116, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute of lease agreement with the Palisades Interstate Park Commission for leased property in the Village of Ellenville, Department of Emergency Services.
So this is for one of the tower sites on the Palisades Interstate Park property in the Village of Ellenville. We have a tower site there. We haven't had a contract for years that we've been trying to work through negotiating, and that's what this is for.
The Minnewaska State Park?
Yes.
Okay, any discussion or questions? Okay, seeing none, can I have a motion to adopt the resolution?
I'll make a motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Anyone opposed? Motion carried 5-0. Resolution 117, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget related to an allocation of aid to prosecution funding from the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services, District Attorney's Office. District Attorney, would you like to speak on this, please?
Thank you. As some of you may know, as a result of the difficulties arising from the new changes in the laws taking effect since January of 2020, the New York State Legislature and Governor made a grant available to all the 62 DA's offices across the state. I believe that the grant was a total of $40 million, and our office received $569,197 from that grant. And the idea is to use that grant to retain employees, ADAs who are here, because people are being poached left and right, basically stop the exodus of ADAs as a result of the impact of the new laws, and also to bring in new people. and basically to some, you know, give stipends, and in some places they were using bonuses. So that's the purpose of, you know, the resolution here, so we can use it as soon as possible. This application probably should have been made. This resolution should have been brought last year. I am trying to, you know, move forward with it for the best of the employees as well as the community that we serve.
Any discussion or questions?
So it should have been during the budget process?
It could have been and should have been. I'm not going to fudge anything for you. It's,
I will say the grant was received in September, which made the timing a bit tricky in terms of how it would have amended. And
but
absolutely should have been included.
Outside the NDA, that wasn't done. Started the process.
Any other questions or discussion?
Yeah. I know how difficult the new laws have made discovery and other parts of your job. Have you used AI to help ease your burden?
Well, we do not have any AI, and that's something that we've never had access to. I don't know if that's in the works, and the county has not given us AI, I would imagine.
I will answer. I actually did a CLE about artificial intelligence and the profession of law, and it's complicated because it gets into complicated ethical issues. On the other hand, not using it leaves us at a disadvantage, I think, in the profession. I did have a preliminary discussion with Alan Macaluso about what tools the county does have. Their Microsoft tools that are available. There is some AI now built into the case law kind of search engines that we use, like Westlaw. And we might utilize it. We'll be back next month. We're pursuing a grant in connection with the sheriff's office, and we might use it as a tool to, you know, help with the grant writing process. That does not supersede the actual work that we do, though. So, but it is something that we are exploring because there are a lot of applications, and I will probably be working with Manny to educate him about how we can best use it, because there are a lot of places where it would be hugely beneficial.
Great. There's free technology right now that you could start using. I took a training in Albany last week called AI for County Communicators, and there was Legislator Collins asked about discovery specifically, but the educator was talking about for sheriff's departments especially, they can the technology can review hours of footage looking for a lamp or a briefcase. It can review hours and find that. So it can help in different ways.
I just wanted to touch base on this. We just had a demo of a company called C3, and we brought it up at CEES meeting today, and it truly is amazing technology. The touch of a finger, you can just connect all the different databases platforms that we have, and it takes what would take an investigator 2 or 3 weeks to complete, maybe 10 to 15 minutes. And that's everything that gets integrated in our system, and it works with all the platforms that we have. I wouldn't necessarily call it artificial intelligence. It's more of an aggregator of platforms, and I'd be more than happy to discuss it with the DA's office, but the only problem is it's not cheap, it's expensive, and you got to be careful with putting stuff that truly is evidence that has to be used in court, and has to have a human element to it at all times.
And that's where it gets tricky for attorneys, and our county court is still paper-based, so we're kind of at a mismatch.
You know, we learn to be very wary. You always have to do an edit. Don't distrust.
There have been people who submitted memorandum of law in court relying on AI materials, and they turned out to be faulty. And to such a degree that the attorneys were susceptible to being sanctioned. So that's part of the dangers there, you know.
Expectations.
Yes. I believe it's the future of law enforcement, though. I really do.
Okay. Any discussion or questions? Okay. A motion to adopt the resolution.
Make the motion.
Second? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Motion is carried. I would just like to say that a lot of people spent a lot of time getting this here on the floor, and I appreciate everybody's input and that we got it through.
If I may?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you and everybody who put in the time. Ms. Ahmed, and the amount of time that she and Jamie and the clerks of the legislature.
Amber.
Amber Pizza and Vicki. Yeah. So
I also both chairs.
I am grateful to all of you. Thank you so much.
Very good. Forthcoming resolutions. I'm just going to bring up something briefly that hopefully I'm going to be bringing forward soon. We have our officer wellness program. I went last week and met with a number of people over in that department to learn what they do. And how we can build on it, and that we need to it's state mandated without funding, so please look for that. We also, if I don't know if anybody up at NYSAC, which we had a great showing from Ulster County, this came up a lot as well, so it's very timely, and please look for that on the radar. New business. So we have a corrections office update. So we've invited Sheriff Employees Association Union President Chris Ryder here. Would you like to share some information with us, sir?
I just wrote a little something down that I just wanted to read out to you and give you a little input, if that's okay. Honorable legislators, on behalf of the 144 members of my union, I write to you today imploring your assistance. Mandatory overtime in Ulster County Jail is at an all-time high, and there is no end in sight. The combination of new law, pandemic, and anti-police sentiment has caused a ripple effect across law enforcement and is more keenly felt in corrections. When there are coverage issues in law enforcement, a lack of manpower, interagency cooperation comes into play from a local level and always to the state level. State troopers can cover town agencies, and counties can assist on all levels. When such shortage occurs in the jail, there are only corrections personnel to turn to. Even among law enforcement, corrections is not something people want to do. Mandatory overtime has occurred when the New York State Constitution requires staffing positions to be unfilled. To run the facility alone, this requires an average of 6 to 10 officers per shift, resulting in 18 to 30 officers per day being held past a normal shift. As a union has a membership of 144, one quarter of our supervisor staff and law enforcement personnel, the rotation can be exhausting. The average officer is now working between 48 to 60 hours weekly, most on much more, creating multiple issues relating to physical condition and emotional stability. Physically consistent working these hours against one's will can cause sleep deprivation, lack of concentration, a short temper, and a short term. In the long term, these conditions can contribute to hypertension, diabetes, neuropathy, elevated cholesterol, and all lead to shortened life expectancy, and cannot be addressed while at work until unless it becomes an emergency situation. Emotionally, mandatory overtime exacts just a heavy toll. Individuals cannot plan anything to do during a work week. This is no guarantee that the individual will be able to leave the facility. Personal, professional, and medical appointments have to be moved to days off or must utilize bank sick time to get out of work. written into the policy this possibility of an abuse sick time. So this creates another stress to should administration choose to investigate one of these use as a bank time. Family concerns are put into second priority position due to mandatory overtime, while missing family dinners, sporting events, or school functions is not unique to law enforcement. It is much more frequent and unanticipated for one to call to remain out of post because of lack of manpower. Family separation is a huge concern in this day and age. Levels of post-traumatic stress disorder are on a rise across law enforcement and are magnified in a contained jail environment. As a person in the United States, it is not normal for a person to be held against their own will for the sake of operations such as a jail. Yes, compensation eases that. However, it does not change the fact that a person cannot leave after putting in an agreed-upon shift. At the end of this type of activity, one can witness behind the walls, and previously mentioned levels can be better understood but not addressed. On the other side of the coin, the financial costs to the county are mounting. In 2020, track mandatory overtime, we listed 6,114.75 hours, reflecting a cost of $305,737.50 to taxpayers. In 2022, the same number rose to $1,065,587.50, a 349% increase in the 2-year time frame. Retirements and departures from service have contributed as well. In 2021, the department lost 22 employees while hiring 17. 2022, we lost 24 while hiring 22. The department is continually operating at a deficit financially and humanely. In closing, we in the union are attempting multiple tactics in conjunction with the sheriff's office. Our results while helping are not doing everything we need to get the relief our people deserve. We are appealing to you at this time to assist in any way you can.
So your contract is up at the end of this year?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right.
When you do recruiting, how much recruiting is done? Because from what I've been here a long time in Kingston, about 23 years, and the only time I've ever heard of recruiting actually happened or test taking is the time I saw you over there in the parking lot and you mentioned September 14th or something. Otherwise, I never seen anything, heard anything, because I can certainly get the word out.
So we use social media. Okay. We have a new professional standards division that has a recruitment and retention. Actually, it's a CO that does it. And I would understand if we were the only one in the state that has this issue. We all have this issue, in particular in corrections. And I've done what I can with what we have to the betterment of the, and okay, I can kind of say a little bit of what I've been doing, but if you want me to stop, I'll stop.
No, please respond.
For the purposes of recruitment, we have a team that goes out. And we had a couple of open houses. I've even, on those Saturdays, I stop by, if there's not enough people, I go out to the mall and start rounding people up to go over and just go take a look to see what we can do. We go to schools. We try to recruit women. Actually, we have something up at Albany coming up where the FBI is sponsoring that. So we're doing what we can with recruitment. We're even going to work on doing a recruitment video. Last year, we hired 33 people. Right now, we have 20 new people. But again, we're not the only ones that have this issue. I understand, and I have a great relationship with the union and the union president. I'm a union man myself, and I came from the trenches, so I know what it is that they're going through, and I'm doing everything that I can, possibly can, to alleviate the issue. Again, it's a big snowball effect. It started during the pandemic when we had hiring freezes. And basically we gave retirement incentives, and we just haven't been able to catch up. Throw on top of that the anti-law enforcement sentiment and the job that's really tough to do. We've done pilot programs with the civil service where all you got to do is sign your name, you get a 70 on the test. You don't even have to take the test. And so we've done what we can. Regarding to try to recruit more. The other issue is the state went to tier 6. It's terrible retirement system. There's no incentive anymore. I try to fight the state to go to a 20-year retirement with corrections rather than 25. And it's just an issue that we are all facing. Albany County was down like 45 COs. I think, again, this is not isolated to Ulster County. This is something that's going on throughout the state. But we have done what we can to make this job a little bit more appealing to workers.
Yeah. I asked Chris to come in tonight. I think we need a corrections presence in law enforcement more often. We don't, a lot of times we don't have them here. I think we should. I do think we can do more. I don't think it's to anybody's fault that we're at where we're at. From the state to all the other counties are all struggling. Albany County just started to start matching. I'm sure you saw that they're matching what you're making in the state. But I think that's what we need to do. We need to step up monetarily. I hear a lot about what was going on up at NYSAC as far as mental health services. If you want to help these men and women's mental health, pay them more and get them home. That's what's going to help. You talk to them. I talk to them. They don't need to go talk to somebody. The job is tough. They don't get paid enough, and they're stuck there. Half the stress comes from the amount that they're working. And I'll tell you what, coming into this next contract, if we're not a dollar or two above Orange County or whatever the county that's touching us the most, I think we got to step up. We're spending $1 million a year, it sounds like, on overtime. Mm-hmm. Let's step up and pay these men and women. And then let's see if we can recruit. I'm sure the sheriff would appreciate that. It would help recruitment. If we care so much, why is it a month? Why are we revisiting the idea of giving these men and women double time on mandates on their days off every month? Why don't we just go ahead and extend it through the rest of the year? Let's not make Chris start hounding people and calling them every couple of days, wondering if we're going to do that. I think it's fair for what these men and women are going through. I think by far and away they got the toughest job in the county. And when you can go to Walmart and probably and work overnights for about the same pay, it's just ridiculous. And we have the money. All I hear is how much money we have. We're finding things to do with it. Let's pay these COs. So I'll tell you right now, I'm going to be a no. I'm going to be talking to every legislator. We're going to be a no on the contract if there's a county that touches Ulster County that is paying more than we are. I don't know if we can go to where the state is, but we got to go closer to what the state is doing. And they're having their own problems, but I'm sick of, I guarantee Orange County has 5 or 6 COs that trained at Ulster County. I doubt we have an Orange County CO working in Ulster County. And that's a shame because we got the money. Why don't we do it? So I'm hoping, and that's why I wanted Chris in here. I know there's always an executive presence. The sheriff, I'm sure, will sign on to anything. But I'd like to hear over the next couple of weeks that we extend throughout the rest of the year the double time on mandated days off. And I'd also like to see an agreement for the rest of this year, double time for every mandate. What these men and women are going through, I think we should have a program where legislators can sign up and go work a shift. We'll be able to go home. We'll find the person that is showing us around might not be able to. But I don't think people really understand what it's like 3 and 4 times a week, holidays. You can't coach. You forget it. These guys give up coaching Little League. That's it. They can't sign up to coach Little League. It's not going to happen. It's not. The amount of things they're missing with their family, that's where most of the stress is coming from. And on top of it, we slap them in the face with superior pay. So I think it's time, sitting around a table, hearing everyone say we're doing all we can. We're not. We can pay these people more. We can do it now. Outside, I talked to the union lawyer the other day. There's nothing the legislature can do. But if the sheriff, and I know he's game, and the exec agree tomorrow, they can give double time on all mandates throughout the rest of the year until we get to the contract negotiations and fully up their pay. Why don't we do that and get rid of this month to month? I mean, how much do we really care? It's month to month. We're making him make all these phone calls every month to see if we're going to supply that again. Let's do it across the board for mandates. I can't do it. I could do a memorializing resolution asking for it. I know right now the sheriff's side will sign on to this. So this is basically up to the executive if they want to go dip into this huge surplus we have and show these COs that we appreciate them and that we do think it's unacceptable and we're going to do everything we can to do this for them. But until then, let's give them double time on every single mandate. And next month, we'll see what happens. We got 30 days. Next month, I'm going to ask Chris to come back. And we'll see where we're at. And then we'll see how much we all care. And really what it comes down to is does the executive branch government care as much as the legislature and the sheriff's department? Let's see. We'll know over the next couple of days.
Vice Chair Hewitt, you're next.
Legislator Maloney, can you explain a little bit more about double time for every mandate?
So right now, month to month, because of what's going on, I'm sure the sheriff can explain it better, but I'm under the impression that if they get called on a day off and told you have to come in,
Let me volunteer to work.
I'm trying to extend that double pay to mandates where they get done with their shift at 8 hours and they're supposed to pick their kids up from school and they're told basically you're going to be fired if you leave. I mean, it would be a process, but you're putting your job at jeopardy by leaving in between a mandate.
And that's a unique situation, if I may.
Yes.
And thank you, legislator. And he's right. And the pandemic was going on. We can't work from home. None of us can. In particular, the corrections division, which is the biggest part of the office. What we're doing now, and there was an agreement with the union, myself, and the county, is that we've been paying double time and a half on their days off to offset the mandatory overtime at the jail. I do like your idea, though, and I hope that we can discuss that with the county. Relating to the actual mandated hours, instead of time and a half, to do double time and a half. And the reason why we haven't been able to do that, because it had to come in within budget of the we're down 22 positions. So that money that's in those 22 positions, that's how we were spending the money for the double time and a half on their days off. So they were coming in. And they are, and we just got it extended for 3 months.
Right.
And they were coming in on their day off, on top of the mandatory overtime that they're working on the week, to get double time and a half to offset the mandatory overtime that all the folks are getting at the jail. And again, the agreement had to fall in place because of the 22 people that were down. That's where the funding's coming from, because I'm not going over budget for personnel. But however, if there's a way that we can work something, I am not opposed to that. And these guys are overworked. We know that. I know that. We're still going to continue to do what we can to hire and up the numbers, and we're trying and doing what we can. And the reason why we had to extend it, because even though we hired 20 people, they got to go to the academy. So they're not working in the facility. So these guys are getting what? More mandatory overtime.
How long is your academy?
Excuse me?
How long is the academy for COs?
3 months.
Okay.
And we're going to the academy right now, and I think
we'll go back to that.
And before I continue, I'm sorry, I want to introduce everyone to the new superintendent of corrections, and that's Colonel Anthony Maggio.
Hey, how's everybody doing? I look forward to working each and every one of you.
Tell me a little bit about your experience.
Okay. So I'm a guy that started in the trenches. I started early 2000 with the sheriff's office in the corrections division, and I grew fond of it and fell in love with my job. I always said before I retired, my name would be on the door outside, and I'm here today, and my name's on the door out there. I'm not retiring. I just really want to touch on a couple things that Officer Ryder said, the union president, the sheriff, Legislator Maloney. Not only these officers working overtime and everything, but our agency is a trendsetter for not only the surrounding counties, the state, but in this country. We have a lot of things that are going on that the officers are doing a fantastic job with. We have a whole bunch of programs coming in the jail. We're trying to reduce recidivism with programs. We got the Ignite program going on. We have the medical medication assisted treatment program, also literacy, jail to college. We have a lot of stuff going on, and these men and women in this office continue to do a tremendous job, and they show up to work and they continue to push forward. I'm saying here, when you walk in the correction side, it says the toughest job in law enforcement. Listen, I'm not taking nothing away from anybody that works the street, the beat. It's a totally different animal. Corrections is the toughest job in law enforcement, and the men and women that we have in that agency is second to none, and they deserve pay that represents their hard work that they put in. If you go around to other counties, you're going to see they're not doing the programs that we're doing. We're the model for surrounding counties here. We're the leader.
We got calls safe from Orange County about their scale machine today.
I have a question. Does have correction officers been mandated to work more than 16 hours in a day?
No.
But with that said, if I can sort of, they can work 3 days in a row, like, you know, 4-6 hours, and that takes a toll.
You were mentioned, I think Chris was mentioning the what the state's requirements are for mandatory staffing, minimum staffing. And then I was wondering how that worked against what I would term the PBA contract. And do those things conflict? And if they conflict, which one's going to supersede the other?
So we are understaffed. And I don't think the sheriff's office ever had 100% minimum standard numbers since I've been there. It's just with the culmination of things that happened during the pandemic that I said earlier, we're just still playing catch up. And that anti-law enforcement sentiment, nobody wants to do these jobs. So it's been, you know, it's just been a tough time trying to recruit people and keep people. Again, it's not isolated to the sheriff's office. We have to do what we have to do. Those are mandatory posts. Somebody's in a jail, we're responsible for the care of those individuals that are in the facility. So it's mandatory that they have to stay there, and it hasn't been.
Thank you.
Is there a minimum or maximum age to come in as a corrections officer?
I'm sorry?
Is there an age limit to coming in as a...
You would be 21. But I'm looking at... I am.
Are you saying,
what's the oldest?
Oh, no, there is no age limit. There is no age limit.
You're coming to work. We got one.
You have to be 21, and there are some sheriff's offices that are reducing it to 18. Mm-hmm. The thing is, they can't be a peace officer until they're 21, but they'll work between 18 and 21, and then we'll make them peace officers. And I'm looking at that because of the issues that we're at. So if they're coming out of high school, I'm going to try and grab them. So we're at that point because we're still down 22 people as we speak.
At the end of this year, there's going to be another lump because that's another lump of seniority of where people are at their 25 and are looking to go. It's going to be another hit.
And another quick point is that and this is the whole service office, we have about 85% new bosses. All that corporate knowledge is walking out the door. And that turns into a liability issue when you have to train new bosses. And that's something that's been going on now for the last 3 to 4 years as well. So it's a big transition.
The hardest part we have right now is, as these gentlemen have been saying, if they come in here and they bring them in, we get, there ain't enough that we get said, no, we want training, we get training. Mm-hmm. We've never been told no about training, anything we need. We get that training. I can get trained here, I can make $10 an hour, and go there and make $20 an hour with that training. And that's what a lot of them are doing. They're going to Orange County. Orange County, in 5 years, you're making $104,000 and change in 5 years as a regular CO. We have COs down there that are making more than our supervisors are at the jail. It's hard. I started the end of this year. I'll have my 25 years. I started walking through that door. I fell in love with the job the minute I came in that door. I still love doing what I do. 90% of the people I love, we have some very good bosses right now that take good care of us, they're there for us, they're supportive, they give us whatever we need to do the job. The problem is, you can work there and deal with what we deal with. You can go Kingston, work Monday through Friday for security at the schools, make just as much. Not get mandated, go home on the weekends, holidays off. So what would you do? You know, it's an easy choice.
Christmas type pay. How many steps to top pay?
Because I think 22 right now.
Explain what that means.
So you got to be there 22 years to get top pay.
The most is that it's 5 years. We're not doing anything to retain.
When you go to Lake Orange County, they're maxed out step raise at I think step 5, and then they do after that they get a little bit more added, but their top pay stops at 5. So they lead you in the door. They treat you like a fresh new date. They're opening the doors for you, and by the time you're in so far, you're hooked. You're getting money hand over, you know, you're handed money like crazy. And we've lost, I think, 7 people to Orange County. We've lost 2 Dutchies I know of And there's people looking now for the next test to go to Orange County because of where we're at. And we're doing everything we can to lock the door on them and not let them go anywhere. And it's hard. It's
Legislator Maloney?
That's one more thing. I definitely, and this goes for all union negotiations. Obviously, the negotiation is the negotiation. But there's a reason that we always approve, because we have no idea what was asked for. And I think as a legislature, we need to start having a conversation with union representatives before negotiations start, where we have a feel for what they're asking for. Then we can actually compare it to what they got, and now we can actually have an up or down vote or kick it back and say, no, we think it was fair what they asked for. So I'm hoping before negotiations officially start, come in and give us a presentation of what you're looking for, the breakdown, especially money-wise. We talked about Orange County a lot. I think we're going to have to step up. Some of that money we're going to see, it's not going to even hurt because the amount of money we're spending on overtime. But I we got to pay more. I mean, it's just it has to happen, and this has got to be the year.
So besides Orange County and Dutchess County, what would be the next three in proximity to us?
You got Greene County, but we're housing their females in because they don't even have enough staff to house their females, so we have them at our jail. They have like maybe 20 officers there in that jail.
Wow.
And then you got like Albany, Rockland.
So really it's Orange and Dutchess.
They're the main ones we actually deal with in them.
Sullivan?
You look at the tax base of Delaware and Greene counties.
Right, you can't compare.
Yeah.
Nowhere near that.
The size of their facility.
I mean, they're nowhere near us.
Yeah. Sullivan? Does Sullivan have?
Sullivan, there's holes in their walls. Their jail's so bad. It's bad.
We don't want to go there, though.
No. And, you know, I don't want to say it in a bad way. Please don't take this the wrong way. When you guys come in, you guys do your tour in a jail, you get the nickel tour. We get the dollar tour for 8 hours to 16 hours every day. We get to see people throwing urine, people fighting, people get stabbed, people doing all kinds of weird, crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the stuff which I love when you guys come there. I want you to see what we deal with, what we go through. That way, you know, we're not talking out our side of our face when we come to you like, oh, we saw this today, we saw that today. We see stuff there that people, like, when we talk about it at family functions, they're like, you did what today? And they're like, you know, it's, I love when you guys go there and do tours, and I like when you guys are there. It shows interest in what we do.
I like what the legislator said. If you want to do an 8-hour shift, figure it out.
Or full-time.
Or full-time.
You know, just also just touch on what Officer Ryder said. You know, everything you hear agency around us is recruitment and retention. Recruitment and retention. You always hear that. And I'm going to tell you right now, recruitment and retention happens with money, and it happens with your benefits, the benefit package. You know, he said we have a handful of people leaving. If our contract is good, where you get a benefit package, you're getting more money. We may have those people that were thinking about leaving actually stay, because every time the people who are senior that have 20-something, 25 years on the job, they leave, that's knowledge that goes out the door. Now you're back home with new people. So it's not only you're trying to train the new people, the new officers, as well as trying to run the facility. The senior people are needed. We need to retain them. We need to keep the people that have 10 years on the job, 15 years on the job from going out. And that's the way we're going to retain them. You know, like I said, I came from the trenches. I know. I'm speaking from knowledge. I worked right beside each and every one of them.
Right.
But these are the things that we need to continue to push forward and continue to do the things that we're doing.
Chair, I just want to make one comment on so even though they had the last contract was probably the highest percentages that they ever had, they were always behind. They were never close to what they should have.
Okay.
The medical, you know, I left the state police. I don't pay for my medical benefits. I don't now. I still have my state benefits. When I became the sheriff, I heard that they were paying 50%, which is close to $15,000 a year. If you have a $50,000 retirement, minus the $15,000, that's not, you can't live in this county on that. And so at least we went from 50% to 35%, but I think we really need to look at that too, because the medical benefits Yeah. When do we need them? When we get older. That's when you need them. And when you retire.
If I may just touch on what you said there, my biggest thing is I'm done at the end of this year. My 25 years are up in January.
Wow.
And my biggest thing is why I want to get out of here, truthfully, is the taxes are killing me, and I'm worried. The life expectancy of a CO is 56 or 58 years old. I'm 53. How much life do I have? I want to enjoy my life a little bit, and I really like. I'm like, right now, if I walk out of here right now, I'm going to be paying $800 a month just for medical insurance for me and my family. Mm-hmm. And that, for giving 25 years to a place, that we appreciate what you're doing, but it hurts. It definitely hurts. Because you can't live in that around here. You're not living in New York State and paying those.
Legislators pay what? Is it 10 years? And then we get it for 10%? For life.
Yeah.
For life. Mm-hmm. Disgusting.
Is there any opens?
How long is your contract for?
It ends at the end of this year.
And how?
It depends. We've done 3 years. We've done 2 years. It all depends.
And this one that you're finishing up is?
It's a three-year one.
Three-year. Okay. Slater.
Question.
People that did the 25 years, is it possible to put in your budget maybe a consultant line to hold on to some of that knowledge?
That would be something I would listen to. We could call it stipend, but it's got to be contractual.
Okay.
It's got to be a collective bargaining agreement.
Okay.
And you would also run into potential 211 waiver needs. Mm. So under state law, anybody who is working post-retirement, and this tends to hit your law enforcement harder because they do tend to retire at that earlier age, anywhere from the retirement age up to 65, you do need a 211 waiver if they're earning over 35,000.
For the purposes of the sheriff, the only 211 waivers I can get is either the undersheriff, for one level under him. That's it. I can't get 211 waivers for anybody else.
And there has been talk at the state level to look at that as an option here, because, again, if you do have those seasoned people who are willing to come back and work for that capacity,
right,
but they're not going to give up their pensions in order to do that, and that $35,000 cap is, frankly, too low for anybody who's going to willing to come back and risk their pension.
Okay. So I think the first thing that I would like to do is look at salaries of Orange and Dutchess, just so we can get everything on paper. I don't know how anybody wants to come back together.
Let's just do the same thing we did here. Can we just put them on the agenda for next month? Chris, you have all that, right? You've given it to me.
I have contracts for Orange, Dutchess. I could probably get Greens, any contract you want. I have
Can you forward those
right
to me, please?
Yeah, and then hand it out. And then we'll also, the other thing, I don't want to forget that we, you know, about the rest of this year and what the exec and the sheriff come up with, and they can, you can all talk next month about if anything's moved there.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to mention again, when I brought up about the wellness, that is state mandated, and it is, I think, much more than somebody just going to talk to somebody, and for some people, that's what they need. But when I went and I sat with about 10 people, I learned a lot and what that wellness entails, and I was very impressed, and it's a whole scheme of things. It's not just somebody to go talk to. Which is important for some people. But when we were up at NYSAC also, people were saying that oftentimes you don't want to go to your own employee assistance program, or you don't want to go somewhere to talk to somebody that knows you. So a lot of different counties were talking about even possibly, you know, swapping counties so that you could go and talk to somebody that nobody's going to know who you are. So all these things are coming together at the same time. So I think the fact that we're sitting here talking about contracts, benefits, wellness, I think it's very timely, and I think this was a good discussion. Yes.
And I did kind of, you know, dismiss the wellness aspect of things, but it was just, I meant it more as a priority. I don't want to get caught up on the sixth floor talking about wellness and as a way to kind of satisfy ourselves that we're doing something. It begins with pay. It really does. And once that gets done, I'll be very much.
Yeah. Well, I think we could work on them together. Sheriff?
Just one last comment. I'm sorry. I know it's late.
No, it's fine.
Just to reiterate what the Colonel has said about the different programs that we're doing that are community based, but we're also doing things that have never happened in any county jail. You could just talk for about 30 seconds about what your case was, because I think it's important for people to know that that what they're doing over there is unique.
Okay. So we have a medication-assisted treatment program, which allows incarcerated individuals to humanely detox and fight their addiction with inside our facility. Over a course of a year of investigation, we've had incarcerated individuals that were housed in our facility that was getting Suboxone off the street and being brought in by civilian visitors to the facility, wound up intercepting 600 and something dosage units of Suboxone, which jail value is about $24,000. A year-long investigation happened. 11 individuals inside, incarcerated individuals and outside civilians, were charged on a 26-count indictment. That's the first time that's ever happened in the county jail. And that case really was the first case that ever happened within DeOsta County Jail. And that case was able to happen because all the men and women in there that were intercepting the Suboxone and the contraband, the dangerous contraband, and jail intelligence unit, the K-9 unit, all that came together. And we put that case together, thanking the district attorney's office, because they worked quite well with us on that case. And that was, you know, going against everything that we're trying to do for these incarcerated individuals, trying to reduce recidivism and let them humanely detox. And the 11 individuals were bringing the stuff in and polluting our facility. So, again, pulled the men and women in that place and made that happen. And that's why we're the next level with other agencies.
Thank you. Senator Maloney, you had your hand up.
Yeah. To that, I just had a couple of comments and questions, and I know some of this is state mandated, so we don't have a lot of choice and discretion in, with how you do some of these things. I personally, I'll put it out there, I'd rather see more of a traditional detox. When you're going, there are a lot of people that are alive today because they were on drugs, they ended up going to jail, they got clean over, it was a tough week, and then they were clean. So as far as transitioning to other drugs that are being, that are obviously still getting high, that's why they're worth so much money, I think that's a nationwide topic we need to have at some point. But, and there may not be a lot of leeway for you because some of this stuff is kind of mandated to do it a certain way. I got a question. Is there ever scenarios in the state, our jail, or another county jail where you have individuals that are, quote, clean for an extended period of time, that can then go and request to get on Suboxone and then granted that request? Does that scenario happen?
So they would have to have proof of a opioid habit prior to being put on the Suboxone program.
But they're in jail.
Right. So when they got introduced, they would be allowed to go on. Yes.
Do we have to do that?
It's not anybody in corrections. It's not the sheriff. It's up to the doctor.
That just seems insane to me. You're in jail, and we have these drugs floating around. Obviously, some of these guys are lifting them and selling them as well, and that's even harder to deal with because you've got the drugs in the jail and you have to give it to them.
That's why we're trying to get the injunctions.
As a country, I just think that's in a state that just seems crazy to me. You're incarcerated. You're clean. And then you want to get on an opioid-like medication, and you're granted that.
Right. I understand what you're saying.
Then you could turn around and make big bucks by lipping it and selling it if you're good at it.
Well, here's the problem with the lipping and selling it is we give the tablet, it's a pill, in our facility. And when that happens, it's in front of an officer. That's just not they get it on MedPass and they take it and they swallow it. We have the officer as well as a nurse. When they take it, They have to sit there. It dissolves. They have to drink water. They take a flashlight. They look in their mouth and make them go through their upper and lower lip, look underneath their tongue. So it's not like a regular med pass that takes place. I understand what you're saying on that. And the Suboxone that's being brought in, because we give that them.
You're finding tabs or whatever.
Sublingual strips. We're getting sublingual strips. What they're getting is tablets. Now, with that being said, the stuff that we're giving them, that's a controlled amount. It's a, you know, it's not like we're giving, they're getting an amount where they can, you know, use it and get high off of it. The Suboxone that we receive coming into the facility, well, it's not more potent. When you take more of it, you can get high off of it. But if you're getting the dosage amount, it's just letting people detox humanely. When they bring that stuff in, it gets abused, just like other medications get abused. So that was the situation. And Suboxone within the facility, the sublingual strips, they bring a lot of money.
Yeah.
Jail value.
But and you're right. But the issue that was going on in the jail for a long time is that when there wasn't a MAP program, these folks were clean in the jail, and then 2 days later when they were released, they were dead. Yeah. They were dead because they thought they had the tolerance limit they had before they got in. And a lot of families were upset that, why aren't we doing something? There were lawsuits that led us to where we're at now with the MAP.
Not a big, you know, just a formality.
You know, not every hat, not every head fits every hat. I understand what you're saying. I come from a different generation as well. I get it. But it's the law now, and if a medical professional says that this person needs to go on Suboxone, we can't tell them that because the doctor said that person gets to go on.
Big pharma.
And right. And as well, the Suboxone tablets that are given have naloxone on them. So it has the stuff that will, if they get out and they use an opioid, it has the stuff to prevent from an overdose. It has, I think it's naloxone within that medication. So that would prevent that from happening.
Okay. Anything else on that? I think that was a great conversation. No.
I just wanted to bring up the population of the four counties that you're comparing with the salaries. I think it's similar work, but Ulster is 183, as we know. Sullivan is 80,000. Dutchess is almost 300,000, and Orange is 405,000. So we just want to take that into account when we look at the numbers.
And I might add, it's not just population, it's tax base. Mm-hmm. Like you look at Orange County's tax base and what they got going on commercially is pretty substantial.
Yeah, so they can afford
it. It's hard to, sometimes that might be harder to compete, person for person.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. So there's nothing wrong. I just need to go back to resolution number 117 for clarification.
We have new information.
No, it's fine.
Should I have left?
No. we just need to make a motion on resolution 117 again because there is amendments. So I just need a motion to adopt the resolution as presented with amendments.
I'll make the motion to do... adopt the resolution with amendments.
Second?
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Thank you for that. So let's see what else is on our agenda. Old business. Sheriff, would you like to speak on CapCore at all today?
Sure.
Because we haven't talked about it enough today.
So we are moving along. We had a couple of things that slowed us down. The main thing was everyone to sign up for a centralized arraignment part.
Can you explain what CapCourt is briefly for those that don't know?
So centralized arraignment part court was put together by the Criminal Justice Task Force and approved by the legislature. And that was part of the Criminal Justice Task Force. And it was supposed to streamline the process because once the law changed and there was bail reform and discovery, the law now is that the public defender has to be at every arraignment. And these were qualified offenses and orders of protections. that are issued. What's been happening is that there aren't enough public defenders to go out to all of these arraignments, and a lot of local police agencies, including the sheriff's office, have to wait 8 to 10 hours to arraign someone because there's no judge or a public defender that's available. So centralized arraignment part means it's 2.5 hours in the morning, 2.5 hours at night, no more on call to 2-3 o'clock in the morning with judges. That the individuals will be come to the sheriff's office at a holding cell, and then be again another mandate, really, if you will, on corrections and the deputies that have to work that in security for the purposes of arraignments. Now, we're not talking about a large amount here because we're not a huge county per se with the rest, but nonetheless, it'll do away with waiting 8 to 10 hours at a local police station to do an arraignment, and the person will be represented by a public defender, as the law states. The judge will be there, and the district attorney's office will also have a representative there at these arraignments. So that's what centralized arraignment part is, basically what the Reader's Digest version of what it is.
The judges rotate.
The judges are going to be on a schedule where they do 2 weeks a year. And again, no more calling for a judge that all night looking, finding for a judge. They would have countywide jurisdiction. And that's something that I think is important in today's world of all the new laws that were passed, to have everyone. And remember, these are qualified offenses. These aren't for violations. Regular court still continues. If you have court in on Tuesday nights, that's going to stay the same.
Senator Maloney?
I got two questions, one to the sheriff and one to the public defender side. Oh, just a guesstimate, how much longer before it's set up?
I'm not. No. There was a huge debate about this.
It's like a generalized.
I'm hoping between 60 days, the most 90 days. I think it's time we've been. Yeah. It's been going on for 3 years, and at first the judge didn't want anything to do with it because they thought it was going to turn into a district court. They haven't approved the district court, which means real lawyers as judges since the 70s. So there's been a couple of bumps along the way, but I think we made through them, I think today's meeting was very, very productive. The public defender was there. They actually, you've taken a lead role on putting the program together, and I'm sure you'll explain that, and I thank you for that. But we're
and
definitely
the plan has been submitted.
Right, the plan has been submitted.
So my question is, until then, is there something we can do financially? I know you don't have to be a public defender. You got a team. What is it called?
18B.
Yeah, I mean, do you need a stipend? Can we?
Well, actually, we took those steps just in the last couple of weeks.
Okay.
We contacted ILS, and they moved budget money from one line to another and moved it just to the capital, to the council at first appearance line. So the meeting that we had today, the focus of it really was to speak to the 18B plan administrator and get a list of attorneys who aren't public defenders who might be willing to come out to the overnight arraignments and just establish that they will be paid and how the voucher system will work. And but thank you for the offer. We definitely would have taken you up on it if you hadn't. Yeah,
so
finally got the plan fully submitted today. And yes, I did help a lot.
So we did have a meeting. Mr. Delahunt from OCA was there.
Mm-hmm.
The public defender is there. DA's office.
I think all interested
was
parties were represented.
It was
judges.
It was an interesting meeting. It was an interesting meeting. But we are moving in the right direction. Hopefully we can get this.
The plan that we submitted had a target date of April 1st because we want to put pressure on whatever the board is that has to review it, and any pressure anyone else wants to put on OCA to get on the group. If the legislators want to say this is, we're in crisis in this county with our campus first appearance, by all means,
we're going to do a letter.
Do it.
And we also discussed doing letters of support for the CAP court to put pressure again on to get that plan really approved. So while I know the sheriff is very optimistic, 90 days, we need the group to meet up in Albany to approve the plan officially, and that's what we're
going to do. For me, I have some letters to get written.
Yeah.
Ashley, did you have your hand up?
I was just going to speak as the former Intimate Partner Violence Task Force Intervention Director. It's very important, and oftentimes it is some of the judges that were not coming out for arraignment, and in the case of issuing an order of protection, it's very important to get this done as soon as possible.
Okay, anything else? In the past, departments have hosted, we take this show on the road. If anyone would like to head up a meeting for law enforcement and public safety at your departments, just let us know. Tyrone said he can, everything is portable and we can go. So,
I think that's great.
We had,
like this the meeting we've had, like we've had it at the sheriff's office, we've had it at restorative justice, we've just so new legislators or existing legislators can see what they do. I'm not going to ask Director Erickson for us to go there.
Go in no room.
Not right now.
No room.
No room.
We'll put a couple of tents out.
We would be happy to host you because we have a grand jury room. Which,
okay, great.
Seats 23.
Perfect.
And we have additional seats in there.
Okay.
But also we have an invitation out to the legislature for the 11th, March 11th, right?
Monday.
That's next week. So we're looking forward to seeing all of you there.
Yep.
I am going to submit a bill for the stats.
Okay, with that said, can I have a motion to adjourn? Second?
Make the motion.
Second.
It is moved and seconded at 6:15 p.m. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.